The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good day, everyone, and welcome again to another edition of Boomer Generation Radio. This is your host, Richard Address, coming to you live from WWDB AM 860 here in the Delaware Valley, streaming live on WWDBAM.com. And we are delighted to welcome to the show this morning Dr. Stephen Goldfein, the Chief Medical Officer of Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice. And we'll be back to talk to Dr. Goldfein about this absolutely fascinating and very, very important part of contemporary American, actually contemporary American worldwide life, right after this message.
Today, many families are expressing a growing interest in preserving the values, thoughts, and experiences of their older members so that future generations can benefit from their wisdom. This is Steve Lubetkin from Lubetkin Communications. We can create a family legacy video you'll treasure for years to come. Get more information now at lubetkin.net or call 856-751-5491. Mention Jewish Sacred Aging and you'll get a 10% discount on your family legacy video project.
Good morning, good day, welcome again back to Boomer Generation Radio, and as I said at the beginning, we're very, very pleased to welcome Dr. Stephen Goldfein, who is the Chief Medical Officer of Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice in southern New Jersey. Dr. Goldfein, are you on the line?
Yes, Sam, good morning.
Good morning, good morning. Thank you for joining us here on Boomer Generation Radio. Samaritan Hospice, if I'm not mistaken, one of, if not the oldest hospice in the South Jersey area. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. We've been around since 1980. We started really as a grassroots movement in the Morristown area, and we've grown to one of the largest in South Jersey. We're not-for-profit, and we're very happy to serve the community.
So just in case somebody was waiting for the Phillies to win another World Series and haven't been really around in the last decade or so, could you give me a very, very basic introduction to Hospice 101? What is it, and where did it come from?
So basically, hospice grew out of a movement, actually came from England, and then they began to view patients as being really holistic. So when people were going through very end of their life, they realized that they just couldn't manage them medically, that they needed to address a lot of the other symptoms like spiritual suffering, emotional suffering. A very famous physician by the name of Cicely Saunders out of England actually had done a tour in the United States, and one of our founders actually saw her and said, we need to bring this to Southern Jersey. Basically, hospice's goal is to provide comfort to patients at the end of their lives. Basically, they need to have a terminal diagnosis with about 6 months to live.
The 6 months, from the work I've done in my aging work and baby boomer and family stuff over the last decade or so, and working with hospice organizations around the country, is it true that the 6 month limit is now kind of fluid? I'm hearing that in some of the places that I've spoken at, that some of that is people are coming in with more than 6 months. Is that true?
Yeah, we're trying to get people in onto the program as early as possible. Unfortunately, a lot of patients come onto our programs and die within 7 days, about a third of them, which means we've missed a huge opportunity to help these patients at their end of their lives, both with symptom management in terms of medications, but also in that family suffering. So in that attempt, we've really tried to move the time that we're involved with patients. The 6 months still is a Medicare regulation. However, when you look at the regulations, it says 6 months or less if the disease progresses as expected. Physicians are not very good at prognosis. We do our best, but we really try to make sure we are honoring that 6 months. But if you're on the program for longer than that, as long as you continue to decline, it's really okay.
So the perception of hospice, I mean, hospice has been around for now several decades, and do you see still people who really have a misperception of hospice or don't quite understand what it is, or are you seeing more and more a general acceptance of this is a very, very valuable end-of-life experience?
I think it's a little of of both. I think patients are afraid of the hospice word. Nobody really wants to die, and I think that we need to have good conversations around death in this country. We know it's a natural occurring event, and we can't really control it very often. But what we can control is the symptom management around that. Patients and their families are still afraid of end-of-life discussions. As our population ages a bit, and we actually are healthier, it becomes even more difficult because nobody wants to face their mortality. But we work very hard to make sure that people understand what hospice actually intends to do. And our goal is not to shorten life or lengthen life. It's to make patients comfortable during the time that they are with us. And I think a lot of patients still in this country pass away with a great deal of suffering that has not been addressed. And so hopefully the hospice message is getting out there that we want to help those folks. I like to talk about hospice as being a place where you can go to live a high quality of life and live your life until it's over.
I think the quality of life discussion is really crucial. I know in the work that I've done and continue to do with baby boomers and their families, the two issues that keep coming up over and over in conversation and workshops is I don't want to die alone, and I'm very afraid of pain and suffering. And I know hospice is, from what I know and from what you've explained, the comfort care concept is really focused on alleviating those two fears of being alone and in pain and suffering. So could you talk a little bit about how hospice deals with the pain and suffering, or in the other terminology, palliative care?
Yeah, and I think hospice itself, unique in medicine, you get a team approach to your care. There's nowhere else in medicine that you do get a physician that's managing your physical symptoms like pain and shortness of breath. But you also get an incredible wealth of knowledge from a very supportive team, including a nurse who is very skilled at managing pain and suffering, a chaplain who really addresses the spiritual issues, not necessarily religious issues, but spiritual issues. And they help you deal with some of those questions of, you know, those why questions, which are always very difficult to deal with. And then, you know, a social worker who also, or she also, helps with managing the symptom management, working very much on counseling. So supporting not only the patient, but I think very important, the family. And, you know, this is a very important family experience. And unless the families are addressed and get the comfort that they desire and they need, it becomes a very negative experience. I think if we get that team involved and in place, it really makes a huge difference. So we palliate, or we make better symptoms, not only physical, but also that emotional and that physical suffering. I think the other thing that we do very well is help the patient define their quality of life, because we talked about goals of care. A goal has to be realistic, but it has to be based on the patient's quality of life and understanding what that quality means. And we all have our own definition of quality. We really begin to investigate what that quality means to certain patients. So, for example, if I define my quality as being able to talk to my family or being able to put my feet in the ocean, that's a quality that we want to focus on and make sure we bring to that family as much as we possibly can.
I think it's very important for people to understand that the subjective concept, as you explained, of the quality of life, and that a hospice tries to deal with the individual where they are and from their own particular personal history, spiritual or emotional, physical, that which leads, of course, to a concern about the growing diversity of the American population. Are you seeing, how does Samaritan or any other hospice in your experience deal with the diversity of the American culture, where you may have, Hispanic, Latino, African-American, island, whatever, all people coming into contact with this, and I imagine it takes a certain amount of specialized training to be able to focus on a particular diverse culture.
Yeah, and I think we at Samaritan work very hard to understand that diversity. I think hospice in general has not really really gotten into the diverse communities, and if you look at the percentage of hospice, we're still very much dealing with the Caucasian white Americans. I think as we move forward, we need to understand that. I do many lectures to my staff and to even the community about cultural diversity. I do a lecture on communication, and I really spend a lot of time talking about how certain cultural groups will communicate and what makes sense. And I bring that from my background. I was actually an anthropologist by degree of when I graduated from the university. And so I bring that cultural background into my teachings to my staff and my family, and as well as community. And so we work very hard to make sure that we understand that culture. I think the biggest thing is you have to ask. You know, and I think if you don't understand the culture, you need to talk to your patients about what they expect, what are their wishes, their desires. Are there certain aspects of their care that are very important to them? How what happens at the time of death or after death? What kind of spiritual, religious rights are there that we need to be aware of? And I think it's being open to that and being willing to then adjust to that family. Also looking at each patient, each individual family as being an individual. You can't just lump everybody into that same cultural group or that same larger group. It's about individual care, and we were very hard at Samaritan to develop individual plans of care for these patients and families.
Dr. Goldfein, we're speaking with Dr. Stephen Goldfein, the Chief Medical Officer of Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice in Southern New Jersey. There's a difference, is there not, between a freestanding hospice and home hospice? Do you do both, or what's the difference, and what's the trend?
Yeah, so Samaritan does have an inpatient hospice unit, which is located in Mount Holly. When we look at the levels of care for hospice, we talk about really four levels of care. Most of our patients remain in that community at-home care. It's about 98 to 99% of our patients. Patients generally want to be at home, and when you ask them, you know, about 80% of patients will respond, they would like to die at home in their beds, which I think is very appropriate. With that level of care, you do get a team of, again, as I said, physicians, nurses, chaplains, home health aides, and social workers. Over the last number of years, we've realized that some patients just cannot be managed at home. Their symptoms are so severe, they require very high-level, very aggressive interventions like intravenous medications, for example, morphine or Ativan, and they can come to our inpatient unit, which is a 12-bed unit. The stay there is very, very short. It's usually between, our average is about 5 days or so. These patients are very close to end of life. Their symptoms have not been managed in other environments. And in New Jersey, there's only very few of these units. So I think it's a very important service that we offer to the community. I think the trend is moving towards a little more inpatient care as patients are getting sicker and sicker and having a hard time managing them.
You mentioned that the concept of a team approach, if I'm understanding this correctly, that is one of the characteristics of hospice care. And before we have to take a break, I have to ask you a question because it just occurred to me. This is very serious work. This is extremely serious work with extremely dedicated individuals. How important, in your experience, is humor in hospice work?
I think it's very important. I think it depends upon how you use it. I think if it's used appropriately, I think certain families are more open to that. Other families, you'd have to be very careful. So, it's, again, individual plan of care, using your knowledge and your feel for the patient you're taking care of. I oftentimes will have patients that are telling me jokes and using humor to combat their own very sad fears. So I think humor is very important. I think with the staff itself, we do look at the world from a very serious perspective, and we understand that, you know, that there has to be some levity and some brevity with some of this care. And I think I always have families really talk about the good times in their lives, even the funny times in their lives. So help that family reminisce about a time that's not so so dark or so black, but a time that is happier. You know, when dad did this or when mom did that. So really kind of use some of that reminiscence and bring that humor from the family perspective into the conversation.
We're talking to Dr. Stephen Goldfein, the Chief Medical Officer of Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice. A couple of things I want to make our listening audience aware of. First of all, Boomer Generation Radio, if you want to contact us or suggest a topic or an individual or just raise a question or a concern, our email is boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. That's boomergenerationradio, one word, one line, @gmail.com. This show, as in most of our shows, will be podcast later on this week on my website, JewishSacredAging.com. And I'm very happy to announce for your future reference that beginning in February 4th, I think, which is about the 1-year anniversary of this show, We're going to be going from 30 minutes to 60 minutes, which is going to give us a little bit more opportunity to explore some of these issues and take some calls. And so just want to make you aware of that. That's beginning on February 4th. And again, boomergenerationradio@gmail.com is how to get a hold of us. I also want to make mention of some friends of ours, friends of the show for these many months, the Hecht Investment Group of Janie Montgomery Scott, which provides concierge financial consulting and planning services. They use a formal investment process and strategy as their foundation. And clients for the Hecht Investment Group, their clients receive frequent communication and rapid response to questions. As many of us know, there are no needs greater than our own when it comes to personal financial planning, especially at our stage of life. The Hecht Investment Group provides experienced guidance and an efficient management process that is important in today's environment. We urge you to contact the Hecht Investment Group toll-free at 855-289-2168. That's 855-289-2168. Mention Boomer Generation Radio. Visit Hecht Investment Group also at hechtinvestmentgroup.com. And they're also on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And we're very happy to announce that the Hecht Investment Group has been recently selected as a 5-star professional organization listed in Philadelphia Magazine. Equally as important as your financial planning as is really some of our physical concerns here as we begin to age. And some of us may remember, perhaps not so fondly, the freshman 15 when we walked into college and the advice that we got from our parents, perhaps about taking care of that and trying to get rid of it. And this issue has come up again in the so-called retirement 15. And we want to make mention of another one of our sponsors, FuelTheBodyWell.com. If you go to FuelTheBodyWell.com, check out, please, their Boomer Wellness Program, which is a blueprint for reversing the so-called Retirement 15. This FuelTheBodyWell.com has a home study course on Boomer Wellness. We urge you to check this out at FuelTheBodyWell.com. Think how wonderful you're going to feel shedding that Retirement 15 at your next holiday dinner or family dinner or Passover or Easter's coming up in just a couple of months. Think how good you're going to feel while you look and feeling healthy and vibrant because of the choices that you make right now. So we urge you not to put this off. Visit FuelTheBodyWell.com today. Dr. Stephen Goldfein, the Chief Medical Officer of Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice, we thank you again for joining us here on Boomer Generation Radio on WWDB AM 860 here in Philly and streaming live on WWDBAM.com. Dr. Goldfein, you talked about this holistic approach, the team approach. Could you just, how important are some so-called alternative therapies in the hospice process, for example, massage or compassionate touch or that type of an experience? Do you see that being used by more and more people in the hospice environment?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have a very aggressive massage therapy program as well as a music therapy program. And, you know, it always amazes me. I've been honored to see a couple of these, especially the music therapy interactions, and you know, the patients and their families just relax completely when these things are happening and these events are going on. Again, I think as you look at a person, we need to realize that the person is not just a physical being, but is also a spiritual and emotional being. And whenever you can touch any part of their soul in any way along the course, you've made a huge difference. The families also are left, especially with music therapy, are left with really memories of that patient forever. And I think that's so touching and so very important for that family.
Could you mention a couple of times the spiritual component, and since I'm a clergy person and sort of like play in that ballpark, could you just talk to us a little bit about how a Samaritan or the hospice program incorporates the spiritual component of really what is the dying process, and not, as you pointed out, not necessarily the religious component, but the spiritual component.
Right. So I think that, you know, our chaplains who all have their own religious backgrounds, they meet with the patients on a regular basis, and they investigate kind of the soul of that patient. They try to help that patient work through a lot of the processes. It's not about, you know, whether you believe in God or whether you believe in a certain religious component. As we're challenged with death, we all ask that question of, you know, why me or what did I do wrong to develop this disease? I think it's a very natural reaction to any kind of disease process. And until that mind and that spirit is free, then you have a different level of suffering. Our chaplains are great. Our chaplains meet with these patients on a regular basis, and they really do spend a great deal of time with the families to help them, you know, and the patients help them work through that kind of suffering and that kind of level. So I think without really the chaplain, you know, care, we could not even provide anywhere near the comfort that we actually do. Again, I look at a person very holistically. I think that, you know, a person is made up of their physical being, but also their spiritual being. So unless you manage both the physical and the spiritual, you're not really managing pain. I've often found myself when I'm giving a patient a lot of pain medications and that patient is still suffering, I call the chaplain and say, you need to come over and talk to this patient. You need to be involved with this family. And, you know, and they just do such a great job. It's just really a peaceful time for that family and that patient.
Could we talk a little bit about one of the other great, well, to be blunt about it, fears of our generation, of the boomers, because we're watching too many of our parents deal with this. And that's where Alzheimer's and dementia, where the individual may not be communicatable to talk about some of these great spiritual issues or even the medical issues or to verbalize I'm in great pain or not. Can you just how do we deal with this in the hospice environment?
Yes, so I think a lot of it's presence. You know, I think a lot of these patients, I think you're right, we're seeing a lot of dementia, a lot of Alzheimer's disease, and patients that have gone beyond the point where they really can interact in terms of a verbal way. But the physical, again, this is sometimes where massage can make a big difference. If a patient will allow you to massage them, they can get a lot of relaxation. Music therapy, I've seen patients that are extremely agitated, extremely upset. The therapist will come in and will bring them down with just playing a song or two and just work on getting that person much more comfortable. The presence of the staff, just really, you know, being there, physically being present. And that presence is really important, I think. Excuse me. A lot of times in medicine, we're not present. You know, we're running to the next patient. We're running to the next moment in our lives. The hospice team is present. I think the presence of, again, the chaplain, of the social worker, of the nurse, provides a much higher level of care for these patients.
The idea of presence, I think, is so powerful, and I agree with you, so often misunderstood. Could you just, before we start running out of time, I've seen the really, in many ways, small miracles that take place within a home, within a family, dealing with hospice. Could you just, if possible, walk the audience through how, in a home situation, person comes home, they call up Samaritan, they get involved with Samaritan Hospice, a person is at home. What takes place? How does that set up in a home situation?
So essentially what will happen is they will be usually met at home by either an admission nurse or the team nurse. The team nurse will begin to obtain kind of the basic medical information and how to manage their symptoms. They'll evaluate them for the suffering. They'll evaluate their symptom management. And then they'll begin to work on getting that patient comfortable. We really pride ourselves in comfort within 48 hours of admission. If patients come in uncomfortable, we work very, very hard to make sure that patient's pain is at least managed. The nurse will also identify whether that patient is having a great deal of suffering in terms of spiritual suffering, and we'll reach out to their team. And I think the important part of the team is that the teams know each other. The teams are pretty fixed, so that when a nurse is working with a social worker or a chaplain, it's a very, you know, tight team. So the nurse can pick up the phone up and call the chaplain and say, hey, I need you out here. I need you to get involved in this case. And it's really that very good one-on-one communication. The first 24, 40 hours, there's a lot of activity. We bring in equipment, we bring in medications. They're visited by, again, as I said, the nurse, the social worker, maybe the chaplain. So there's a lot of activity, really focusing on that patient's comfort. And then it kind of slows down a little bit so that as the patient settles in, the family gets to settle in, gets to know the team a little bit better.
How often will you or your team get approached by a family at home, person is in the process of dying, and they come to you and say, it's not dignified to have my loved one suffer, and we want to give them an increased amount of pain medication to make them comfortable. We know that this may hasten their own death.
I think it does happen. It happens, I'm not going to say frequently, but it happens on a regular basis. And, you know, really what our goal is for that patient is to provide comfort. We don't want to shorten life or extend life. We want to make sure that we're managing the symptoms. We investigate, really, are we meeting the mark in terms of the physical pain and the emotional pain? We want to make sure that we get enough the support to the family and the house to do that. But I think there's also that component of the suffering to the family members. You know, watching a loved one slowly die of Alzheimer's disease does get at times very, very discomforting and very distraught. And so, again, providing support for that family, we're very good about focusing on the symptoms, managing those symptoms. You know, I think the ethics behind it basically says if you're trying to manage the symptoms, then, you know, the medicines that are necessary or what's necessary. And so we try to make sure we're maintaining that ethical mark.
The Samaritan Geriatric Care Manager Program, which is a sponsor of this show, but could you just talk about that for, we have about 2 minutes left, because that's very, very important, the care manager approach with a family.
Sure. What we found at Samaritan, just at this point in time in people's lives, is that there are a lot of people that need additional support and additional help before they become hospice eligible, or even before they become close to the end of their lives. You know, the frail elderly at home, the patient, the family that's living here with the family out of state, and you know, there's not a lot of resources out there to help families connect with resources. So our care management program really allows an evaluation so that our team can then provide a recommendation for the family to provide level of care. They can actually go to doctor's appointments. They can provide some social worker support. And they really help that family put some stability and a plan of care around their loved ones, especially that frail elderly population who's failing at home, and the goal is to keep them at home.
So if someone wants to tap into the expertise and has need of your services, how do they get in touch with you, Dr. Goldfein?
They can actually call into Samaritan. The number is 1-800-229-8183.
Say that again.
1-800-229-8183.
So, Dr. Stephen Goldfein, Chief Medical Officer of Samaritan Healthcare and Hospice, I want to thank you very, very much. We've run out of time, but there's so much more to talk about. Hopefully we can, in a future time, get you back. So thank you very much. Stay safe today. And thank you, Tim and Tony. And to all of you, we'll see you next week at Boomer Generation Radio. Again, if you want to contact us, boomergenerationradio@gmail.com. Have a great day. Stay safe, everyone.